Thanks a lot, and I appreciate you being here for this symposium. And I want to thank our leader, too, for bringing us together, because it's quite important that we think about this. There's obviously a lot of other ways to produce energy, but cropping systems is one way that we can actually make a contribution. I want to talk about a crop that's quite well known around the world as lucerne or alfalfa. It is grown widely in North America. It's been widely adapted through plant breeding. There are now germplasms that can stand quite a bit of salinity and low pH. But you can see that it's grown all the way up into Canada, where it's even colder than where I'm located in Minnesota, and down into Mexico, where we've never seen it so warm. It's the fourth most important crop in the U.S. That comes as a surprise to many people, but you can see it here. These are acres, but you can see that after the top three grain crops, it's the widest grown crop in the U.S., and it's the only named agricultural crop, not horticultural, the perennial, only named perennial crop that shows up on the NAS statistics, National Ag Statistics Service. It's grown in all 50 states, from Alaska and through the Midwest, California, down in Kentucky, where it's often grazed. So it's really quite well adapted. And we also know how to grow it. We have private and public plant breeding companies and groups. We have private seed production, mainly out west, marketing, variety testing, which is done in many states, fewer than it used to be, but where we can get objective results on yield, disease, and so on. The Extension Service and crop consultants know the crop, and machinery manufacturers are making both harvest equipment and equipment for transport that are much less energy intensive than they used to be, and we have a well-established hay sales and transportation system. So it's not a new crop. We're here to talk about sustainability, and Russ pointed out the hypoxia in the Gulf of Mexico. Well, the Mississippi River Basin, for those of you who aren't from here, is a very large river basin. And these areas that are in darker colors are the source of the nitrogen and phosphorus that mainly contribute to this low oxygen zone that has really disrupted our continental shelf organisms and also disrupted the fishing industry. And it's a major national priority to fix that. Perennials like alfalfa or plantings of perennial grass mixes can keep nitrate losses very low, regardless of how much drainage there is through these subsurface drained fields that tend to be too wet in spring and fall for agricultural activities. So a few years ago, we put 40,000 miles, I don't know how many kilometers that is, right offhand, 65,000 or something kilometers of tile in 1 year. So farmers are doing this. They can see that it really benefits them. But the problem is that nitrate moves with water, gets in these public ditches, and then and much of it then makes its way down here. If you grow corn, continuous corn or corn and soybean, the amount of loss increases considerably as we have more and more water loss. Perennials can take care of that. Part of that has to do, again, with what Russ talked about, which is early season water use, where we can produce 1.5 to 2 tons per acre, or 3.4 to 4 plus megagrams per hectare, before corn is actually using much water or taking up nitrogen. Likewise, it uses water through the season. These are harvest periods, for those of you who don't know. And then in fall, there's a green crop in the field that's also using water. This is important because drainage is mainly a problem in spring. It's from fall recharge of the soil, then over winter, at least in our area, not much happens. But then when spring rains come again, we have a huge outflow of water, and that's where most of our nitrate loss occurs. So it uses water, but it also uses nitrate in the soil. This is old work by ARS researchers in Colorado. First of all, I wanted to say that root growth is very rapid in alfalfa. This is 6 feet or 1.5 meters, and a one-year-old crop with a normal growing season can often be down between 4 and 5 feet or 1.5 meters roughly, two-year-old, and it continues to grow as long as the soil matrix allows that. You can see the tremendous reduction in nitrate that occurred down to 3 meters and below using alfalfa in a contaminated site. It also builds soil organic carbon. This is not alfalfa. This is a really nice study from Uruguay where they had annual cropping and then right across the plot border a three-year perennial, three-year annual cropping system, and they dug a trench and took pictures. Anecdotal, they have actual real data on this. But this is the only system in Uruguay that allowed them to maintain soil organic carbon. Any system that had less perennials in it, they lost carbon. This is some work by Angers in Canada, and you can see the rapid increase in soil carbon. In only 3 years, it reached a new plateau under those systems. This isn't topsoil data, but you can get these benefits in a very short term. You also have the benefit of a reduced nitrogen need on the subsequent crop. Alfalfa is a perennial, but it's grown as a short-term perennial in most systems. So usually 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and then rotate to something else. This is, I'm sorry that the citations aren't showing up. If you want to know, I can give you my slide set, so just let me know afterward. This is the corn after corn yield response to nitrogen. This is corn after soybean, and the difference in the economic optimum N rate for corn after corn and corn after soybean is called the nitrogen credit, or nitrogen replacement value. After 3 years of alfalfa, there was no need for nitrogen, and that's a pretty typical response. The second crop of corn also needed less nitrogen, so there was an N credit in the second crop of corn after alfalfa. And in addition, there's other non-nitrogen related rotation effects. This has to do with disease cycles, insect pests, and so on, where having a perennial will break that. This is data that we're pulling together. Matt Yost is leading this effort. This is for second year corn. This is a literature analysis, so there's 67 site years shown here. This is the optimum N rate for second year corn. So alfalfa grown for 3 or 4 years and then year of corn and then another year of corn. And you can see that for about half of the cases, no nitrogen was needed at all. And for the others, variable amounts up to the amount that you'd normally have to apply to the corn. And of the trials we have, where we have both years, we know that half of those required no nitrogen in either year. So that's a tremendous savings. And you heard from Kurt Thielen that there's a huge amount of energy and greenhouse gas investment in producing fertilizer. Well, we've done semi-meta-analysis, literature analysis of first-year corn response after alfalfa, and have found that alfalfa stand age is a really important predictor, the termination time, whether it's fall or spring, the weather that occurs from the fall of the last alfalfa year until spring of the corn year, and the soil texture. These all have a big impact on how much end credit there is. But the alfalfa stand age was not a surprise, but it doesn't fit any of our current recommendations. We did a GIS analysis. This is using the Statistics Service cropland data layer. And this shows for 6 states in the upper Midwest, this is Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota. And Russ is right about up in here. We're down in here. Michigan's way over here, on the other side of the water. These are areas that had alfalfa in for 2 years out of a 7-year period that we could analyze. That's where 3 years are overlaid on top. And those are fields with 4 years of alfalfa before it was rotated out, and 5, 6, and 7. And you can see that there's a spatial differentiation on how long alfalfa is kept in. And when we summarize that with some clustering data, we see that in the main corn production area, corn and soybean, they tend to be shorter phase lengths, 3 or 4 years. Outside that, they tend to be longer, 5, 6, and 7 years. And as I just showed you, the benefits can be achieved with much shorter rotations than 6 or 7 years. Obviously, producers out here have other things in mind. They maybe want to plant once and keep it as long as possible so that they don't get wind erosion, things like that. Well, there's lots of other benefits of alfalfa, and this is a nice publication out of California a few years ago. It's a great break crop. It provides feed and habitat for wildlife. You can see how their yield is being reduced by antelope. It's a great insectary, which also helps support spiders. And in the biomass system that I'll talk about in a second, it's also a great pollination crop and for pollen and nectar. It helps improve air quality because it's keeping the soil covered year-round, and there's soil protection against runoff, and it also improves soil quality. Now, all of these benefits are achieved even though we remove all the above-ground biomass every year, or almost all of it. So we're already doing that. We're already growing it and removing all the above-ground biomass, and we're not degrading soil quality. And so for a biomass crop, that's pretty ideal. There's less energy required. I only have this comparison between alfalfa, which is this green or light green, olive green bar, and either a soybean or corn grain, corn stover, energy use for production. And you can see that corn is much higher. Again, that's because of the fertilizer input, but there's relatively low need for energy. It also has very reasonable carbon emissions with a life cycle analysis from Eastern Canada. This just compares alfalfa, and then 2 years of corn, 2 years of soybean, and then 4 years of corn, a continuous corn system. And you can see that alfalfa has the least emissions, in large part because of the storage compared to the continuous corn crop. Well, we've analyzed a potential fuel shed around the town of Medelia, Minnesota, in southern Minnesota. And we have the soils data, and we estimated crop yield based on the productivity index of those soils. I'm going to show you four maps just like this. This one is for soybean, and it's the expected net energy of the harvested material. It's not a life cycle analysis. It's just the net energy minus the energy required to produce it and haul it. The cooler colors are lower energy. This is 0 to 50 gigajoules per hectare, but that's pretty irrelevant. I want you to take a look at this. This is soybean. That's corn stover. Obviously, you've got corn grain on top of that. So you can see that there's a lot more energy coming off in corn grain than either corn stover or soybean, and that's alfalfa. And alfalfa doesn't usually look red, but it's red because it's producing a lot of net energy, even though its yields are as low as soybean, for example, for total biomass. Well, we're not the only ones working on this. This has been an idea that's been around at least 20 years to use alfalfa stems as a biofuel and leaves as an animal feed, or maybe as a product that you can extract other benefits from. And Kevin Shinners and Matt Digman and others have been working on a one-pass system for stripping leaves off the alfalfa and conditioning the stems so they dry and you can pick them up the next day. The stems then can be pre-treated and you can generate fuel or some other, use them as a fermentation substrate for other things. They just came out with a nice paper in Biological Engineering Transactions showing that if you dewater the leaf, you can, depending on the pressure you use, you get a liquid extract that has 30 kilograms of protein per metric ton of material and a press cake that can be immediately ensiled. That's the problem with harvesting leaves at the same time, right from the field, and you can't put them up, they're too wet. So this produces a very nice silage that has the composition and performance that are at least equal to alfalfa silage. Now in a biomass crop production system, these are from Joanne Lamb, Craig Schaefer, and others have looked at harvesting fewer times. Instead of four times per year, might harvest three. So you let the crop get older. We've been pushing alfalfa for dairy feed by harvesting earlier and earlier. So usually farmers harvest at mid-bud stage. Well, this is harvested at full flower. And you can see that leaf yield may or may not be changed, but stem yield is increased between 30 and 58% in one study. That means that you've increased your total biomass production, you've decreased your energy cost. Thank you. This is work that I've just completed. It's not published yet. This is average whole farm yield in megagrams per hectare. I've asked NASS for a special data set in 1.5-ton increments in English units. And obviously, the theoretical yield goes up linearly with alfalfa yield. But when it's expressed as the relative energy gain as actual ethanol, assuming theoretical times 0.4, just 40% recovery as ethanol, divided by the total energy input, you can see that even with very low, pathetically low alfalfa yields of 1.5 tons or 3.4 megagrams per hectare, you still have a net energy gain there of over 3, and at very high yields, they go between 6 and 7.5 fold. And this is for, you know, all the way through the processing for ethanol. A big problem we have in alfalfa is low yields. This is work I published just last year. These numbers are the median yield, whole farm yield, from the Survey of Agriculture Census in 2007. The bold face is the difference between those yields and the top 10% of farmers. So basically this says farmers could double their yields in many places, whether it's irrigated or not. I'm just working on this now, a new thing on acres that are in each of those yield increments. And the same thing's true when we look at it at yields. You could always think, well, all right, top 10% of farmers are really top-notch, they're throwing everything on it. But it's also true when we look at acres. These are just 4 states, but the median is about 4 metric tons per hectare, and the top 10% of acres are producing over 10. So there's really a huge yield gap. Now we have to remember, as do others, and maybe more so for biomass production, that you can't always put everything on the same units. And if you don't put them on the same units, you come up with a nonsensical number, okay? And what we have to be able to do is to speak with people about the advantages of our different systems in dollars, in greenhouse gases, in ecosystem services, and so on, and not try to put them all on dollars. That's nonsensical. Alfalfa offers multiple bottom-line benefits. It's doing it today. It does all of these great things, and all we need is a Boy Scout to help across the street to improve yields, or a Girl Scout would be fine, too. Thanks very much.